So I'm up to the bottom of Daf Mem Tesamid Beis, and we're in the fourth parak. We're talking about Muktzah, and we're going back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah discusses something called Gizei Tzemer, and what they used to do is they used to sometimes designate the shearings of wool from the sheep for the purpose of hatmana, which means that if they had a pot of food that was hot on Erev Shabbos, and they wanted to keep it hot, so what they would do is they would wrap it up in various materials, and one of these materials is called Gizei Tzemer, which is the shearings of the wool. And that you'll see in the Mishnah Daf Mem Tes Amud Aleph on the bottom. You know, there are two Mishnayos on that daf. And if you look at the second Mishnah, we're talking about Tomnin Bishlochim Umitaltalin Osan. And then Begizei Tzemer V'ein Mitaltalin Osan. So what that means is that you're allowed to do Atmana with the wool of the sheep. And the reason you're allowed to do that is because on Erev Shabbos, you're allowed to wrap up and insulate your pot with a davar she'eino mosif heva. As long as it doesn't increase the heat, it just maintains the heat, that you're allowed to do. But on the other hand, you have a problem because the Gizei Tzemer themselves, the shearings, are muktzah. Now, the whole purpose of my insulating my pot is that when it's time to eat my meal, I want to take out my pot. And if I take out my pot, then inevitably what's going to happen is that the shearings that are wrapped, you know, around the pot are going to fall to the side. And then I'm moving something that's muktzah. So the Mishnah says, Ketzeru Oseh, how do you solve this problem? And how do you get access to the pot without possibly moving the Gizei Tzemer that's around the pot? And the Mishnah says, Notel Sakisui Veinoflos Me'alehem. That what he does is he lifts the lid over the pot, and the shearings of wool will fall to the side. And even though he's causing the movement of something that's muktzah, but it's indirect movement of muktzah. And the Mishnah says that's called tiltul min atzad, which means indirect movement of muktzah, and that's permitted. Okay, Omar Rava. So we're about to start the Gemara on the bottom of Mem Tes Amud Beis. Four lines up from the bottom, and that's Omar Rava. Omar Rava, Lo Shanu, when do we say that there's a problem of Mukta? Ela Kishalo Taman Bahem. Aval Taman Bahem, Mitaltlin Osan. Rava says the following. Mukta means something that wasn't prepared for Shabbos. So you didn't designate it for any sort of use for Shabbos. And the shearings of wool are usually made, you designated to weave the wool into a garment, you know, to make threads out of the wool, and that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. That makes wool, you know, natural wool, raw wool, muktzah. But here, since he designated it for hatmana, for the purpose of insulating his pot, then it's no longer designated for creating threads and for weaving purposes, and therefore it's not mukta. But the Mishnah says, Tomnin begizei tzemer ve'ein metalten osam. So we thought that the Mishnah is saying that even though you used and designated these shearings for a purpose of insulation, nevertheless it's mukta. No. Rava says that's not what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah means Tomnin Begizei Tzemer, period. And when the Mishnah says we ain't metalten osan, the Mishnah means to say that you're not allowed to be metaltel stam gizei tzemer if he did not use it for insulation. But if he used it on Erev Shabbos to insulate his pot, then it's no longer muktzah. So there are two different dinim here. We have to really take one sentence in the Mishnah and chop it in half. And one half of the Mishnah is talking about the laws of Atmana, and it permits you to do Atmana in Gizei Tzemer. Once you do the Atmana in Gizei Tzemer, it's already been designated for use, and then there's no Isur Muktzah. And then the Mishnah makes a general statement that has nothing to do with this case of Atmana about the status of wool in its natural state, and it's muktzah. In those days, they used to have a student who came to learn at the feet of his Rebbe for just one day. And then he would go back home because he lived very far away. So this particular student came for the first time into the Beis Medrash of Rava, and he heard Rava's taich of the Mishnah, and he asked him the following kasha. He says, Esvei l'Rava tomdin begizei tzemer v'yein metalten oson. And then the Mishnah says, v'keitzadu oseh. What should he do in order to get his pot out of the insulation? And here we turn to Daf Nun Amud Aleph. No tel asakisu v'yein no flows. The Mishnah organizes it in such a way that you can take the pot out by lifting up the lid and then pouring out the contents of your pot and eating it for lunch or dinner without violating the Isur Muktzah. So obviously the Mishnah is saying that even though you use this shearings as insulation, nevertheless, it is problematic. It does have the status of Muktzah. So the Gemara says there's no way that we can accept Rava and reconcile Rava with the Mishnah unless we rewrite the text. Ela yitmar, hachi yitmar. Omar Rava, we have to rewrite Rava's statement. And that is lo shanu ela shalo yichadon latmona. Aval yichadon latmona mitaltelin oson. When does the Mishnah say that you're not allowed to move gizei tzemer because they have the status of muktzah? That's a case where he did not designate it for Atmana. But if he had designated for Atmana, then metaltelin oson, then it's not muktzah. So what we want to try to figure out here is, what does the Gemara mean in this new formulation of Rava that it depends on yichdan or lo yichdan? The Mishnah did not teach that wool shearings are muktzah except if he did not designate them for insulating on a permanent basis. Which means, according to this revised version of Rava, that just because you use the shearings for insulation on one single occasion, that doesn't remove the status of muktzah. If you used it one time without permanently designating the wool for this purpose, then it still remains muktzah. But Rava's chiddush is that if he designates this wool on a permanent basis for insulation, he's going to use it this Shabbos, he's going to use it next Shabbos, maybe even in between, during the weekday he'll use it for insulation, then it's not muktzah. Now, this comment and this interpretation is based on Rashi. Rashi, Dibra Maskil Yichdan, adds the word Li'olam on the second line. And the poskim quote this Rashi in Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim Siman Reish Nun Tes. It's brought down in the Magen Avram, also in Reish Nun Tes, also in the Mishnah Bura. And that means that Rava rescinded his original position that all you need is one time insulation. Now Rava says no. You need what's called Yichud Li'olam, a permanent designation of these shearings. However, the tour in Aruch Chaim Siman Reish Nun Tes has a different opinion, and he says that as long as you used it one time on one particular Shabbos, it loses its status of muktzah. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Lavush, who lived about the same time as Shulchan Aruch, and he accepted that sheet of the Torah. And therefore, Rava changed his mind from what he thought originally. Rava thought originally that even if he used it on one occasion, b'derech mikra, he happened to chance upon these wool shearings, and he used it, it's already sufficient to remove the status of muktz, and you're allowed to be metaltal it. Rava changes his mind, and in his new formulation, it wasn't accidental. You know, he looked around and he needed something desperately to insulate his pot. But rather, he designated this shearings on a one-time basis, but deliberately, for the purpose of insulating his pot. And that's not the final conclusion. The final conclusion might have been, without Rava, and that would be the simple meaning of the Mishnah, that you need Yichud Li'olam. But according to the Torah and the Levush, you don't need Yichud Li'olam, you just need Yichud, and die be Yichud L'Shabbos Achas, but you have to do an act of Yichud. You have to deliberately decide that these shearings are designated for Yichud. Again, that's not the sheet of Rashi. Rashi says Li'olam, and the poskim, like the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah, base themselves on Rashi, that you need Yichud Li'olam in order to remove the status of muktz. Okay. Now, the Gemara's language is Ela I Itmar Hachi Itmar. And that means that since we couldn't understand the original formulation of Rava, then we must attribute a new pshat to Rava's words. Okay. Now, I want to quote to you Akasha the Ritva. The Ritva asks the following question. It would seem that Ahumi Rabbanon, that student who asked the Kasha, asked it to Rav himself. And yet, the Gemara says, Eli Itmar, Hachi Itmar, which sounds like we're reformulating the words of Rava. But yet, Rava was being asked a face-to-face question by his student. So the Ritva writes that the question of Ahumi Rabbanon was not directed to Rava himself, but rather it was a question in the Beis Medrash on the words of Rava. And that's how many of the Achronim follow the path of the Ritva. But the Masifta quotes a Sefer called Yad David, and he says the following. He takes out the word l'rava. If you take a look in our text in the Gemara, it says Esveyahu mirabonon bar yome l'rava, which means he addressed Rava. But the Adavid claims, and he based himself on what's called a Tfus Venitzia, the Venice printing of the Shas, that you take out the word Lerava. Now the Karban Esanel also seems to take out the word Lerava. And Tosvis, Dira Maskel Ella, on the top of Daf Nun, writes that we should change the Girsa in the answer of the Gemara. The Gemara shouldn't say Ella Itmar Hachi Itmar, but it should be Ella Amar Rava, which means that Rava himself rescinded his original position, and now he gives you his final understanding. Which means that Rava is now reinterpreting, so to speak, his original position. Originally he said Lo Shanu Ela Shelo Taman, and now he's saying, you know what I meant when I said Lo Shanu Ela Shelo Taman? I meant to say Shelo Yiched Latmana Mitchila. He did not designate these shearings for on an ongoing basis for Atmana. El Tolan Bahem Rak L'Shabbat Zu. He only used it for this one particular Shabbos. But if in the past he was tomen, he used these shearings for insulation, which means yichtol hatmona, he designated for hatmona, then he's allowed to be metaltal and it has no mukts. So when the Mishnah addresses the question of how to get the food out of his pot when it's been insulated by mukta, the Mishnah is talking about a case where he used it just on this one-time basis for atmana, but it was not a case of yiched, where he designated li'olam on an ongoing basis, henceforth, for the purpose of atmana. Itmar Nami, the Gemara now supports this new formulation of Rava. Ki asa Ravin, when Rava came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and he understood in Eretz Yisrael that it was said, Amar Rav Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Asi ben Sholom a Rebbe, so a tradition that takes us all the way back to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Lo Shanu, the Muktza problem of Gizei Tzemer only applies, El Shalo Yichton Latmona, Aval Yichton Latmona, Mitaltun O Son. But if he had designated for purposes of insulation, then he's allowed to use it and move it without any hesitation of muktza. So we have now a tradition that takes us all the way back to Rebbe, that is an exact duplicate of the new formulation of Rav. Now again, how do you translate those words, yichton latmona? That's going to be a machlokes between Rashi and the Torah that we mentioned earlier. Rashi is going to say yichton latmona means li'olam, and the Torah says it's sufficient if he's yichton latmona for this particular Shabbos. Now the Gemara offers a new interpretation of Rava that justifies the leniency to move Gizei Tzemer if he used it for insulation. Ravina Omar, then in truth we go back to the original formulation of Rava, that once he used the Gizei Tzemer for insulation, Fatmana, then it's no longer Mukta, and you don't need Yichud Latmana, you just used it. Once you used it, that itself is Yichud. The Mishnah says that you're not allowed to move the Gizei Tzemer. That's a case of Bishel Heftek Shanu. That's a case of a pile of wool that is designated by a professional sheep raiser, right? He's a farmer of some sort. He raises sheep, and what he does is he cuts off the shearings of the sheep and he sells it publicly. So he makes a profit from selling wool. On one particular occasion, he was up the creek without a paddle. He needed something for insulation of his pot, and he had no choice. So just on a temporary basis, he went into his reservoir of Gizei Tzemer, and he, so to speak, borrowed it from himself, to use it on that one occasion for Atmana. And that means it was miyuchad l'schara. This was being used on a one-time basis, and then he's going to put it back on the shelves, you know, for his clients to buy when they order gizei tzemer. That's muktza. Rav, on the other hand, is talking about a case of gizei tzemer shelo yichdon l'schora. He did not designate them for the market. And Rav's comment has nothing to do with the Mishnah. He's making a separate, independent comment to explain what's the status of gizei tzemer. And he says the following, that although the Mishnah is talking about a case of heftek, which is that professional seller who markets his shearings, and therefore it's mukta, and the Mishnah has to find some way that in a case where he was desperate and he had to use these shearings for insulation, how does he get the food out of the pot? Rava makes an independent statement, and he says that in general, if you're not a heftek guy, you're just your regular person who's not in the business of selling shearings of a sheep, then the status is that once you use it for any purpose whatsoever, in this case, if you use it for insulation, you have no intention to put it back onto the shelves, you know, in your storefront, then you're allowed to be metaltled with this gizei tzemer, and it's not muktzah. Now, at this point, once again, I just want to read to you a summary of this new formulation of Rava. Rava, according to this new interpretation of Ravina, is referring to the wool shearings of a warehouse, of a merchant, who stocks his shelves for sale, and such shearings, even if he removed it from the shell on a one-time shot, but destined to return it back to the shelves, they remain muktza. Rav, on the other hand, was referring to ordinary shearings that lose their muktza status even if he uses it for insulation once. That's what we can say to summarize this sugya of Ravina. Now, we have a double machlokas here that I want to mention. First of all, in general, what's the reason for the Iser Tiltul of shearings Gizei Tzemer? According to the Rav Shulchan Aruch, the status of shearings is what's called Mukta Machmas Gufo. And that means that in general, just like there's an Iser Mukta that applies to, let's say, Eitzim Vavonim, wood and stones, because they don't have any function, so too Gizei Tzemer has no function. But the difference between heftek and not heftek is that in the case of heftek, it's not sufficient to designate it for use fatmano, because he's going to put him back on the shelves. That's one opinion, and that's the opinion of the Rav Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam, in Hilchos Shabbos Perkof Av, and other Rishonim, have a different way of categorizing and defining the shearings of a sheep. And that's called Muktzo Machmas Chisaron Kis. Something that you designate for market, let's say in the case of heftek, if you use it, then you might ruin it. And if you might ruin it, then you're going to suffer a financial loss. And it's only in the case of yichud where you decide, I mean, let's go the other way around. When is gizei tzemer mukta, according to the Rambam? That's only when you designate it for schora. And when you designate it for schora, it loses its status as a kli. According to the Rav Shulchan Aruch, it never had a status as the kli to begin with. and therefore it's muktzah unless you decide to use it as a kli. According to the Rambam, it's just the opposite. It has the status of a kli intrinsically, and it's not muktzah. The isur tiltul is a result of the fact that you designated it for the purpose of sale. And since you don't want to use something that you need to sell on the market, you makpid not to use it for other purposes, it loses its shame kli, and it's called mukta machmas chisaron kis. That's machlokes number one. Now we go on to a different machlokes. Number two. Now we're going to start with, again, the opinion of the Rav Shulchan Aruch. And he says, in explaining Ravina, that lo mo'il yichud al yidei atmana begizei tzemer shel heftek. That according to Ravina, in the case of a merchant, the fact that he designates these gizei tzemer for hatmana purposes does not undermine the status of muktza. Kavanoso, what does Ravina have in mind? Sheinicham beheftek, that once he puts it on the shelves for marketing, hu makpid aleihem shelo yishtamish bahem dvarim nosafim. It could be, this is one possibility, that when he puts it down on the shelves, he excludes any other use for it. Oh, another possibility in interpreting Ravina is kavanoso gam legizim she'eno makbid lishtamish bahem. Even if he has gizim, right, the shearings, that he's not makbid, he's not going to object if somebody wants to use them or if he decides to use them. And the Rav Shulchan Aruch says that Ravina has in mind dafka shearings that he's makpid, that he would not agree to use it, and that makes it muktza. That's the opinion of the Rav Shulchan Aruch. Others, and he quotes here a sefer called the Evena Ozer, which I think I have somewhere in my library, but don't ask me to find it. They are of the opinion that gizei tzemer are considered mukta, machmas gufa, and that we mentioned earlier in the name of the Rav Shulchan Aruch, and it's irrelevant whether he's makpid or not makpid. In the absence of yichud, it's not going to be. It's not going to be a kli. It has the status of mukta, and we can assume that he, after he uses it, he's going to put it back on the shelves and sell it. So let me just summarize the second machlokas haposkim. One school of thought says that when you talk about gizei tzemer in the case of a heftek, of a merchant, you're talking about someone who's makpid. He's very careful. He doesn't want anyone to use it. He's afraid that if somebody uses it, he will misuse it and he'll ruin it. The other sheet, or the other approach, and one opinion says that the only reason why in the case of heftek it's mukta is because he's very makpid. He's very makpid to make sure to designate it for sale, for merchandise, and he doesn't want anyone touching it. That's the opinion of the Even Ha'ozer, that gizei tzemer. So again, I forgot where we were holding in terms of the names. The first opinion was the Rav Shulchan Aruch, and he says that Ravina has in mind a person, a heftek, who is very careful. He doesn't want anyone to use it. That's what gives it the status of book. So the second opinion, the Even Ozer, is that in and of itself, intrinsically, gizei tzemer are mukta, because machmas gufan, they're like eitzim vavanim, and it doesn't matter one iota whether he's makpid that people shouldn't touch it, or he isn't makpid, even if he's very laid down about it. There's no such thing as yichud unless he designates it on a long-term basis for li'olam vayed, for purpose of insulation. Okay. Tana Rabba Bar Chana Kame Derav. Now Rabba Bar Chana has a brisa which he presents to Rav. Now, just by way of introduction, an object which is not a kli, it doesn't have a function, and it's not a foodstuff, like we mentioned before, stones or pieces of wood. We have beams, we have dirt on the ground, we have currency. These are things that are called muktzavach maskufo. They have no intrinsic purpose, and therefore they are mukta. How do we go about designating them on Erev Shabbos for use on Shabbos? For example, we have a case of charios shel dekel. These are branches of a date tree. And if you leave them in the sun, they become very hard. And you can actually use them for burning as firewood, and that's called shegodron. He cuts them down from the tree, from the palm tree, these branches, when they get hard, and he designates them le'etzim. Etzim means what we call hasaka, for the purpose of feeding his fire. That's what he normally has in mind when he cuts down these branches from the palm tree. And that would be mukta, because we don't feed the fire on Shabbos. Obviously, that would be Meleches Havara. But Nimlach, now he changed his mind, Aleim, regarding these branches, Liyeshiva. He wants to use them as chairs to sit on. And here we have a machlokes tanoim in this brice of Rabbah. According to the Tanakama, it's not enough that he changed his mind and he decided before Shabbos that he's going to use them as a seating, but rather tzarch l'kasha. He has to do an action. What he has to do is he's got to tie together a bunch of these branches and make a little kind of a seating arrangement. Again, it'll be quite basic, it's not a fancy seating, but he's got to demonstrate with action, changing the nature of the object in order to remove its status of Mutzumach Masgufa. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Eino Tzarch L'Kashe. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, once he decided on Erev Shabbos that he wants to use them for sitting, as seating, he doesn't have to do an action. So we see from this brisa a fundamental machlokes about being matir tiltul mukta on Erev Shabbos by taking something that's mukta, machmas gufo. Do you have to do an action to actually change the physical structure of the mukta, or it's enough that you designate it in your mind for a purpose? And then Rabbi Baruch Hanai, after he quotes this brisa, he interprets this brisa. V'hu tani lei. And he interprets this brisa, vu amar, who tonile means he transmits this brisa, vu who amarla, and he embellishes it, he interprets it. And he writes, halacha k'rav Shimon Gamliel, that in this case of chario shel dekel, you're allowed to be metaltel them, if just through machshav alone, without a maisa, you decided that you want to use them for seating. And now the Gemara is going to say that this is a machlokes amoroim, which mirror images the machlokes tanoim in Rabba's brisa. Itmar, Rav Omar kosher. Rav says if you want to be matin the isutiltul of muktzamach maskufo in the case of these beams of wood, you have to tie them together and an action is necessary. Shmuel Omar kosher. Shmuel says all you have to do is think about it on Erev Shabbos. I want to use That's my mental state. I want to use this for seating, for this purpose. Now we have a third shita, which did not appear in the Braisa of Rabbah, and that's Ravasi. Ravasi Omar, Yoshev, Afal Pishalo Kisher, the Afal Pishalo Kishev. And believe it or not, Ravasi is the most makil. He's the most lenient. He's even more lenient than Shmuel. Shmuel says at least Choshev, that he has to have made a decision on Erev Shabbos that he will use it on Shabbos for seating. Rav says he doesn't even have to make that decision. All he has to do is sit on them once. Once he sits on them on Erev Shabbos, he changes the nature of this pile of wood, if you will, of this piece of wood, and it's no longer mukta because he used it as a for seating. So afal pi shelo kisher, he did not do any action as Rav would demand to tie them together. Afal pi shelo kisher, he didn't even come to the point of Shmuel, which means that he decided that tomorrow on Shabbos he's going to sit on them. All he had to do was sit on them one time, and that itself is what we call a gili das, and that reveals that in his mind this is designated for seating. He can do it on a Sunday, for example. He sat on these branches on Sunday, didn't have anything in mind as far as Shabbos is concerned. According to Ravasi, that's sufficient. And before we go on, and we'll see that the Gemara is going to attack Ravasi because neither of the two opinions that we quote in the Braisa Rabbah Bar Bar Chana would seem to reflect the Shita of Ravasi, which means Ravasi is the odd man out. But before we do that, let's just summarize the three Shitas. So number one, we have the Braisa that formulates two shitos. We have branches of a date palm, and he harvests it for firewood, and that makes it mukta. And then he changed his mind and decided to use them for seating, as a seat. According to the first Tana, he has to tie them into bundles before Shabbos in order to render them non-mukta. According to the second opinion of Shimon Gamliel, Ein tzarich lekasher, all he has to do is intend to use them on Shabbos as seats. Then Rabbi Bar Bar Chana paskins like Rav Shimon Gamliel. We find a similar machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says that to remove the mukta status, you have to tie them into bundles. Shmuel says all he has to do is intend to sit on them. And Ravasi says, even though he did not tie them, even though he did not intend to sit on them, it's not necessary for him to consciously have an intention to sit on them on Shabbos, but he sat on them on a day before Shabbos, let's say on Friday. That itself is an indication that he wishes to use them as a seat, and that suffices to remove the status of mukta. Now it's interesting. If we turn the clock back a little bit to the case of Gizei Tzemer, of wool shearings, we said that once he uses them to insulate his pot on Friday afternoon, he removes the mukta status from the shearings because he designated them for his purpose, and that is insulation. In the case of the palm branches that we're dealing with now, the Churios Shel Dekel, the Braisa has a machlokes as to how to remove the mukta status. And according to one shita, that's the Tanakama, you need to tie up the branches. Now, that doesn't seem to reflect what we said about shearings. In the case of shearing, with the exception of the Heftek case, all you need in your mind is to designate them for insulation. And summarizing the Shita of the Ritva, In the case of palm branches, they have a stricter law than wool shearings. But it's complicated because, on the one hand, palm branches are really not, they're not suited in and of themselves for sitting. You really have to stretch it, you know, to use these branches for sitting. Wool shearings, in and of themselves, are fine for insulation. So therefore, in the case of palm branches, in order to undermine their muksa status and make them non-muksa, we have to be more machmir to make some sort of a change, at least according to the Tanakhama. But there's a paradox here, because wool shearings are actually much more valuable if you use them for weaving and spinning and spinning than palm branches as far as firewood is concerned. And therefore there's a possibility that we might be even more makil and more lenient with regard to palm branches. And all we need, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, is just a thought that occurs to me on Friday that I want to sit on these palm branches because they're very inexpensive and I don't really lose anything by using them for seats, for seating purposes. Okay, firewood. Fine, I'll find something else for firewood. But in the case of shearings, they have a little bit more, shall we say, value, and therefore it could be that until he uses it as an insulation, it still remains muktzah. And Rav Shimon Gamliel would admit that although yichud v'machshava, even without a maisa, is sufficient to undermine the status of muktzah for firewood, he would not agree that that mental state is enough to remove the status of muktzah in the case of something that's very chashuv, shearings of wool, which can be used to make threads and garments. There, even Rav Shimon Gamliel would admit that you have to already start using it. You need that maisa of insulation in order to remove the status of muktzah. That's just an overview of the Ritva. So the Gemara says, Bishlema, I understand Rav, who the Omer Ketanakama, Shmuel, who the Omer Kerev Shimon Gamliel, El Rav Asi, the Omer Keman. Rav Asi seems to be the odd man out. He doesn't fit neither into the Tanakama, who requires Kshira, nor to Rav Shimon Gamliel, who requires at least Yichud V'Vachshava. And the Gemara answers, who the Omer Ki Aitani has a different Tana in a Braisa that has to do with what's called a wound on the body, and a person needs to protect that wound because if he doesn't put a bandage on it, then it could get rubbed up. And Yotzim, now if he puts this bandage on, the question is whether or not this bandage is mukta. If it's muktzah, he's got a problem if he wants to walk around with a bandage that's muktzah. So the Braisa says the following. Yotzim b'fakorin. Fakorin, he calls pishtan saruk. It means he combs the flax. Flax in its natural state is full of impurities. He has to comb it out. Ubitzipa. Tzipa is shearings of the wool of a sheep, and here tzipa means it's menupats. Again, he has to beat it in order to get rid of these little stickers and stuff. And then, after he changes the pishtan, the pokorin, and the semer of tzipa, at that point it could serve as a bandage, and it will not irritate his wound. It'll, on the contrary, protect his wound. However, bizman shetzva'on, now here there's a girsa question, b'shemen ukrachon b'meshicha. It's not enough that he already combed the flax or the wool. He's got to go one step beyond that. He's got to dip the flax or the wool into oil, to make sure that it's soft, because otherwise, again, it'll irritate his wound. And then he can tie this piece of flax or wool around his wound with a mashicha. Mashicha is a rope or a string to make sure that it will remain steadfast around his wound. So in other words, when he dips this into oil, then he perfects it as a bandage, and now he's revealed his intention to use it as a bandage to cover his wound and protect his wound. And not only that, he wants to make sure that the garments that he wears on top of this wound, because the wound is directly on his flesh, will not irritate his wound. Now, if that be the case, then we have to realize and appreciate that this bandage is not like any other garment that he wears. On the contrary, in a sense, the bandage is kind of separating his body from the garment that he newly wears, because the garment otherwise could irritate his wound. And other garments he wears what we call b'derech levush, b'derech malbush, the way you would normally wear garments. And it has nothing to do with refuah. You know, it's not there for a purpose of a medicinal purpose. And that's fine. That's beged. And you don't have any issues about preparing the beged, designating the beged, and wearing it, and levush, and so forth and so on. But in the case of flax and wool, there you have to go through this entire process that reveals that you want to wear this not as a beged, but you want to use it to protect your wound for medicinal purposes. The Braisa goes on and says, Lo tzvan, v'lo krachan b'mashicha, if he didn't undergo this process and he didn't dip the, you know, the flax into oil, or he didn't tie him around with a rope, is then ein yotzin lehem. Why? Because it's not a malbush and it's not lirfua mimanafsha. It's going to irritate his wound, so it cannot be medicinal, and it's certainly not a malbush. He's not wearing it as an outer garment. Therefore, it ends up to be a masa. Masa means you're carrying it on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to carry it outside in Rishus HaRabim. So that's what it means, and the Brayse says, Ein yotzin bohem. Im yotze bohem sha'achas mibodjom. However, let's say that he decides, for whatever reason, he doesn't have the opportunity to soak it in oil, this bandage. He doesn't have the opportunity to tie it around the way he should tie it around. But nevertheless, he uses it on Friday, Mibod Yom, is then Muto Lotzeis Bohen, now becomes a kind of a malbush, which means it's not medicinal, because again, it's not going to be very helpful. It's going to probably irritate his wound. But nevertheless, he used it on one occasion as a kind of malbush. Again, I don't know in what primitive way he tied it around his leg or his knee or wherever it is that he has the wound. That I can't tell you right now. But this Tana seems to assume that if you use it on one occasion, then you're allowed to be metaltal. And surely, if you ask him what his ultimate intention would be, he's probably going to, when he gets the opportunity, he's going to dip it into the oil and tie it around the sophisticated way that he should do so. So this is not a reflection of Rav Shita and the Tanakhama, the Brice of Rabbah, which means kosher. He certainly hasn't tied it around. It's not even a reflection of Shmuel Shita, because Shmuel requires that he, in his mind, designates it for sitting purposes in the case of the branches from the date tree. But here's a case where he used it on one occasion. And that reflects the Shita Ravasi that we said in the case of the date trees, that all he has to do is yeshiva. Yeshiva means he's got to sit on them on Friday on one occasion. That already changes the nature of the branches. And in our case, in this brisa, according to this Tana, once he uses this bandage on one occasion, that already removes the Iser tilta. So let me again give you a little bit of a summary of this brisa, which is quoted here by Rav Asi. And that is, a person could go out into the public domain on Shabbos with combed flax or combed wool applied to his wound, provided that he dips them into oil before Shabbos and wraps them around with a string. If he didn't dip them into oil, nor did he wrap them around with a string, he's not allowed to go out with them. So these bandages are worn to prevent the person who's wearing them from clothing that might rub against his wound and imitate his wound. If they're dipped in oil, they can achieve this goal in the optimum fashion. They're considered like garments, because now he achieves his goal. Wearing them is no longer considered carrying. It's not a burden, he's not carrying it. But if they weren't dipped in oil, and therefore these flax pieces tend to rub against the wound and irritate it, so they're not effective in protecting the wound, he's not wearing it b'derech malbush, and therefore he's considered carrying them. However, the Brisa continues and says, if he went out with them, even for a short time, on Friday, even if he didn't dip them in oil, he didn't wrap them around with a string, he's permitted to go out with them on Shabbos. This reflects the Shita of Rav Asi that we saw before, who maintains that sitting on the branches on Friday is sufficient to render them non-mukta, even without tying them or intending to sit with them on the Shabbos. He just used it once as a seat. Here too, he used it on one occasion as a bandage for his wound. So the Brisa only mentions the case where the bandages were not dipped in oil, and it says you're not allowed to go out with them on Shabbos, and it would be a problem of Havaris Dalet Amis Brishus HaRabim. But it's also true that this bandage would be considered mukta if he didn't dip the bandage into oil. Why? Because linen and wool strips are ordinarily destined for use for forbidden malachas, for weaving or for spinning. That gives them a mukta status. The Brisa is telling us that you can change the designation of this wool or this or these strips of linen. It's no longer for weaving or for spinning, and you're allowed to go out with them. And how do you change their designation? You dip them into oil and you wrap them around your wound. However, the Brisa goes ahead and says that even if you didn't dip them into oil or wrap them around with a string, you can remove the mukta status, or shall we say the mukta status will be removed, if on one occasion he wore them as a bandage on Friday. So not only does that mean that he has circumvented, or shall we say solved, the problem of masa, of carrying, he's also solved the problem of tiltul mukta. Why? Because he wore them on one occasion, and he used them as a bandage. So now he solves two problems. Number one, it's no longer masa. And number two, what's more relevant to our discussion, it's no longer mukt. Omar Rav Ashi, Afanan Namitrina, and Rav Ashi says, I have another proof from a Mishnah to prove Rav Ashi's opinion. It is based on a Mishnah later on, at the end of Shabbos. Hakash
But we're talking about straw. Now, straw is muktzah, because if you're going to use it for anything, you make bricks out of it, or you use it as fuel for your fire. Shal gabi amita, the straw was sitting on his bed. He didn't designate it for the purpose of using it as a mattress to sleep on. And now he decides that he wants to sleep on them. And he spreads out this straw over his bed. And if the straw is piled on top of each other, that doesn't indicate that he wants to use it for as a mattress. But if he spreads it out, that indicates that he wants to use it as a mattress. So far, it sounds like, according to this price, you need an action to remove the status of muktzah. However, the Brisa continues and says, Lo yinano biyado. In other words, on Shabbos, if he did not spread it out over his bed as a mattress, then he's not allowed to shake it out and spread it out over his bed with his hands, because it's muktzah and he's moving muktzah. Aval minano begufo. If he can somehow, again, I don't know how to orchestrate this, but if he moves his body in a certain way, and he's able to, let's say, sit on it and move around with it and spread it throughout the bed, that's okay. Aval im haya machal behema. Let's say this straw was dedicated not for the purpose of making bricks, or for burning as fuel, but rather it was designated to feed animals, those animals that eat straw. I remember my day I saw the camel eating straw. He says, in such a case, O Shahoyal of Kar, O Sudin Mibojon, or alternatively, if he lies down over this straw on Friday, and kar means he uses it as as kind of like a pillow for his head, or sadin, I guess, is a mattress for his body, and he on one occasion he actually laid down on this straw, then it's no longer muktzah. Then he can move it around on Shabbos to make it even more comfortable for himself, even though on Erev Shabbos he did not have any thought to designate it for these purposes, but on one occasion he actually did so, and he sat on it, he laid on it, it's no longer muktzah. Shema mina, we see clearly, says Rav Ashi, like we saw in Rav Asi, that you don't need yichud, like Shmuel said, or like Rav Shimon Gamliel, in order to remove the muktzah status. You don't have to designate it henceforth for Shabbos, I'm going to use it as a mattress, but it's enough that he used it on one occasion before Shabbos, and that alone is enough to remove the status of muktzah. This reflects the shita of Rav Asi that we had before. So once again, we're talking about straw that's on a bed. He's not allowed to move it with his hands. He can only move with his body. He shifts around his body in such a way that he moves the straw. That's not considered muktzah, because he does it with his body. If, on the other end, the straw was designated for animal fodder, that's not muktzah. Or, alternatively, if a pillow or a sheet was put over it, meaning that the person laying on top of the straw before Shabbos, then he's allowed to move it around, and this would support the shita of Rav Asi. Now, if we go back to the Braisa of Rabbah, that records a machlokas between Rav Shimon Gamliel and Tanakama about how to redesignate muktzah. The Tanakama says you need a mice, you have to tie up the branches to use it as a seat. Rav Shimon Gamliel says you have to be miyachid it for Shabbos use. Man Tana de Polagale de Rav Shimon Gamliel, who is the Tana who holds that you need a mice, that unknown anonymous Tana, which is the Tanakama? Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva, who? How do we know it's Rav Chanina ben Akiva? Tchi Asa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bava, and there was a shmua, there was some sort of transmission of his Torah that came from Eretz Yisrael, and it went the following: Omar Ziri, Omar Abchanina. Ziri said the name Rabbi Chanina. Pamachas Holach Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva leMakom Echad. So this Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva went to a certain place, and Motza Chariel Shel Dekel, and there he found these branches of a date tree, Shegdarum Lishum Eitzim, that were cut down, harvested for the purpose of firewood. The Amalem LeTalmidav, and Rabbi Aki, and this Rabbi Chanina said to the students, Tzu VeChishvu. I want you to go out and think about them, which means to designate them for use as a seat, kidei sheneshev aleim l'mocha, so that we'll sit on it tomorrow. Ziri says the following: V'lo yadana, I'm not sure why Rabbi Chanina allowed removing the status of muktzah from these palm branches through machshava, just by saying tzu v'chishru aleha. E be mishtavi, e beis evel havi. What happens in a urgent situation when you know you're making a wedding and you need seating, or chas v'shalom, the opposite is true, it's a beis avel and all of a sudden we need seats, and the Gemara says that it seems from Ze'iri that this was a pressing, urgent need. Midika Amar, from the fact that Ziri says he didn't know whether it was a base on Mishnahavi, a base of Elhavi, it means that Rabbi Chanina would not have normally allowed Machshava to remove the Mukta status. Dafka base ha'evel, o base ha'mishta. This was a very pressing reason why he allowed it. The treaty. So is it Dafka Beis Avel or Beis HaMishteh? And the reason for the heter of Rab Chanina, according to this tzad in Ze'iri Sofik, is because of the pressing need, and they didn't have time before Shabbos to tie up the palm trees. But Hacha, meaning in another situation, to be Matir Muktzah and change the status of Muktzah to non-Muktzah, it's not enough Machshava, but rather you need Kosher, you need to tie them up. And if you didn't tie them up, is Kosher in, low Kosher low, and therefore, according to this side, Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva would reflect the Shita of the Tanakama of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Brice of Rabbah, that you need an action in order to change the physical status of these palm trees and remove the status of Muktz. So we're up to Amar Rav Yehuda, Machnis Adam Meloku Paso Afar, here on the first of the wide lines on Daf Nun Amid Aleph. And again, this is a description of the karka in the house. They didn't have shayish, they didn't have what we call ritzuf. You know, they had just karka, just offer. They had earth. And if somebody would spit saliva, or let's say in excrements, he had to cover it with offer. So again, stama offer of a bais is mukta. That's called mukta machmas gufo. It's not omid l'shimush. The Gemara now wants to clarify, how would a person be miyached? He would designate offer for use. And the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yehuda, Machnis Adam Aloku Paso Afar, Vyoseba Kolt Sarko. If he takes into his house on Erev Shabbos a certain amount of Afar, and he designates it in such a way that he wants to use it, Lechasos Potsoa, or Rok Bebeso, then Oseba Kolt Sarko, he's allowed to do this, and the Afar is no longer muktza. So we'll just summarize Rabbi Yehuda. A person is allowed to bring in a basketful of earth into his house before Shabbos, use it for all his needs on the Shabbos, to cover filth or saliva on the floor of his house.
And then the Gemara quotes a drasha, Dorash Mar Zutra Mishmei Demar Zutra Rabba, for who sheyiched lo keren zavis, that this kula of Rabbi Yehuda only applies when he sets aside a corner of his house for the storage of the earth. So he piles it up in one corner. He doesn't spread it around over the ground. If he would spread it around, scatter it around over the ground, then it becomes batel to the ground. People are going to step on it. The residents of the house will trod on it. And if it's subordinate to the ground, it remains muktzah. Amru Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Papa. The Rabbanan said in front of Rav Papa, Kiman, whose sheet does this reflect? Kiram and Shimon Gamliel. This would reflect the sheet of Gamliel, who says that all you need is yichud b'machshava, you need intention, and that removes muktzah. De'ikir Rabbanan, ha'amri be'inan maisa. According to Rabbanan, we need an action. Right? We had to tie up the branches of the date tree and make a change in the object. Here we didn't make any change in the object. There was no action to change it. So therefore we did not undermine the status of muktzah to make it into something that's non-muktzah. Amalu Rav Papa, so Rav Papa says, Afilu Temer Rabbonon, this could be reconciled, review the statement with the Rabbonon, Ad kan lo kami Rabbonon David and Maisa, when did the Rabbonon require Maisa? Elamidi de bara vidabe Maisa, something that lends itself to a Maisa. For example, you have palm branches, and in order to set up a seat, in the ideal state, you would have to tie them into bundles. Avalmidi de lav bar mi'evda, but if something doesn't lend itself, like the earth, the ground, the soil, the dirt on the ground, doesn't lend itself to any sort of maisa, lo, then the Rabbanan themselves would drop the requirement of a maisa. And that leads us to Nema Kitanoi. And this is where we're going to stop for today. And Lema Kitanoi is here on Daf Nun Amud Aleph. And in the wide lines on the bottom, we're up to Nema Kitanoi, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down in the wide lines on Daf Nun Amud Aleph. Nema Kitanoi.